Hello, my name is Rich Tarani, and this is a TMC podcast. I am the president and the group editor-in-chief here of both TMC and TMCNet, and I'm very excited to have on the line with me Chris Barton, who is the CEO and president of Wholesale Carrier Services. Chris, hi, how are you?
I'm great, Rich. Thanks for holding the interview.
My pleasure. Thanks for being available. And you mentioned to me, we'll make some of our listeners a little jealous. You're based right now out of what part of the country?
We're in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami, South Florida area.
Okay, so I guess depending on when people listen to this, if it's in July and August, they may not be as jealous as if they listen to this in December, January, or February, right?
Nah, it's a year-round envy. You know, we have bikinis during the during the summer, and we have the same bikinis during the winter, so it works either way.
Something for everyone, I guess. Yeah, I love it down there. You know, we have our IT Expo show down there, and we're going to be down there next year in the Miami Convention Center, and it's something I really look forward to. I've always enjoyed the not only the weather of Florida, but just the culture and the extreme mix of different nationalities, as well as just the atmosphere of Miami and the energy. You can't leave out the energy. It seems like no one sleeps. Is that true?
Yeah, the South Florida, like many parts of Florida, is really a service industry. So, you know, we don't have, you know, big factories and lots of manufacturing going on here. And as a result, you know, you've got a lot of entrepreneurial people living here. You've got people from all over the world living here, primarily because of the weather and the scenery. And for that reason, there's usually something going on morning, noon, and night, particularly in the Miami area. And Miami's a little bit like New York in that respect. We call it the East Coast LA. You get a lot of characters for sure.
That's great. So I'd love for you to just give us an overview of WCS. What is it exactly that your company does?
We are a national CLEC and value-added billing provider. What we've been doing for the past 15 years is enabling channel partners and to some degree some carrier partners access to a platform that we call PartnerNet. And what PartnerNet produces is a supply chain management tool that manages at present about 87 carriers, 130 different products, all specific to the telecom industry, that we provide on a consolidated billing platform. And we offer all of these services at a buy rate, which the channel partners and or reseller partners can co-brand, private label, or, you know, not brand and just distribute. And they're free to mark up the price of the services that they charge to, you know, whatever price point they wish. So they maintain a lot of control. They're not subject to commission schemes and, you know, changes in comm plans and things like that. The advantage to our business model is that the control of what the customer is to pay and the estimated or desired profit margin on each individual service that is charged on the bill is all in the control of the channel partner or the reseller partner. So we have a lot of master agent, sub-agent, you know, large sub-agent type individuals who come to us to convert from being agents into being effectively virtual switchless resellers. And we have a product called Virtual Telco that caters specifically to that business process.
And what are some of the advantages of making that switch?
Well, you know, one of the obvious ones is, you know, as you work in the channel community, there are a lot of what I'll call winds of change afoot right now. It could be anything from your compensation package being changed, you know, by a, you know, a new entrant in the senior management of the sales organization of the carrier you represent. Could be contractual changes that the carriers are imposing to meet stockholder expectations, namely lifting quotas and reducing commissions if those quotas aren't fulfilled. We don't operate like that here. What our goal is we want to convert agents into virtual resellers for two reasons. The first being they're building an asset as opposed to, you know, a payroll check. When you're an agent, the asset belongs to the carrier.
Right.
When you're a virtual telco at WCS, you own the customer. It's your contract. You have total control over, you know, business terms with that customer. and I am effectively a service bureau rather than a carrier partner. And many of our channel partners enjoy unique bundling of products, say, you know, taking a local product from AT&T, a data product from Verizon, and a internet product from Quest, and a conferencing product from, say, Intercall, and bundling all of those into one contract and adjusting the margins to meet the customer's expectations so that they can get total wallet share, but the customer gets one bill.
And from the customer's perspective, do they know who the carrier is?
In most cases, yes. I mean, it's not a secret in most of the provisioning events that occur because, you know, the loop being dropped, if it's being handled by the carrier and I'm simply reselling it, they're going to know that it's an AT&T or Quest circuit. But each of our contract exhibits, we leave areas to populate who the underlying network provider is so that the agent or the end user can both see that when they fulfill their order. But generally speaking, I would say, you know, they are always aware up front because most of our customers tend to be larger in size. And as a result, diversity, redundancy are very important to them. So they want to know that, you know, if they buy two different carriers at two different price points, you know, are they getting true, you know, diversity across those two different carrier designs.
And so the goal is to have a better price, but also to have some sort of guarantee that, well, maybe not a guarantee, but at least an assurance that your service is always going to work when you pick up the phone?
That's one of the benefits, yes. We have a value pyramid that I can send over to you, but the value pyramid for the channel partner, you know, stepping aside from the end user, is, you know, they have an unlimited range of customizable pricing and product options. I mean, literally, if it exists in the market today, I probably either have access to it under a current contract relationship and can buy it and resell it, or we can make the arrangement if it's a boutique provider that we haven't done business with before and bring that into our ecosystem of suppliers. The other, you know, the branding function, the contracting benefits, one of the major, you know, sticking points of working with these larger clients is because they are large businesses and they do have a lot of spend, their legal processes are very difficult. It is not unusual for a contract to be hung in legal for 30 days with a major client spending more than, say, $1 million a year. And in my world, we sit down with a customer and I actually will architect the legal document that the customer is contracting through us with so that if the customer requires specific SLAs or specific conditions to do business, we have that flexibility because it's virtual. It's a virtual sales environment for that end user. And as a result, there are many times where our competitors are in at a comparable rate, but I'm out the door with ink on a contract because they can't get past the sticking points in the contract negotiations of the, you know, T's and C's. Agents in particular love that because, you know, they're sales machines. They want to, you know, deliver an order as quickly as possible. So our cycle time tends to be, you know, more efficient and certainly shorter than some of our competitors.
Oh, that's interesting. And so the carriers are good with that? That works out okay for them?
Well, you know, we have a symbiotic relationship. As a reseller, we're a competitor and we're a buyer. So, you know, there's instances where carriers will be certainly irritated that we're competing against them, in some cases against their own embedded account, utilizing their very same services. We don't do that by design, but sometimes the customer requests that the layout of their network and the carriers that we select may in fact actually overlap with services they already have. So they, you know, in turn might swap out a, you know, a Paytech local PRI for a Paytech wholesale provided PRI because that's in the best interest of the customer's footprint. But in most cases, our carrier partners value our relationship with them because as the economy worsens, and it will, and as the carrier community begins to collapse further, and it will, and as labor is pushed further and further out of the carrier community and into the solution provider, integrator, agent groups distributing the services, the business models that these guys are all operating under must become more efficient. There's simply not enough margin in these deals for there to be, you know, master agent, sub agent, you know, delivery mechanism, and that be competitive to, say, a retail price on the street. So what we're seeing is the carriers are saying, we want to make selective decisions on who we distribute through, and we're fortunate that most of the major suppliers out there view us as a positive benefit to their distribution philosophy. And as we go to market, they're saving money in the long run because I'm taking on all this operational overhead for them. I'm taking on the billing function. I'm taking on the collection function. I'm dealing with the agent so they don't have to deal with the agent apparatus anymore. We're paying the commissions. We're, you know, doing all the legal and the regulatory. There's no delivery of product other than provisioning the circuit, which I'm also very heavily involved in. So as a result, the cost to the carrier drops significantly, and they are able to sell the same service, but they just don't own the customer anymore. They have a relationship with us. So it just depends on which carrier you're talking to, what time of the year, and you know what the whim of the year is as to how they view the wholesale segment. And there's a lot of opinion and a lot of papers been written about that recently as to you know what the future looks like.
Now, you just mentioned a couple things about the economic environment as well and just consolidation of carriers. I'm sure the listeners are interested on your take of why you think the economic environment is going to get worse.
Well,
I'm not sure if that was a slip or you meant that or something.
No. I've been telling our channel. This was about 9 months ago. We had a forum with a number of people here in South Florida, you know, talking about the competitive landscape, you know, the economic conditions, because it really started taking hold, you know, about third quarter. And I had been telling our agents, you need to prepare yourself for a 30% pay cut. Now, some of these agents that we work with, and I will call them solution providers or, you know, channel partners, have been successful in continuing to ride the wave of economic, you know, decline by offering, you know, service cost reductions to new customers who are looking to save money and replacing orders they're losing due to bankruptcy or, you know, to migrating to another carrier, you know, whatever the impact is in their existing customer base. And replacing it with, you know, better customers, hopefully larger through us because we focus on larger deals. And they're weathering it. But the majority of the agents that we speak to are finding sales activity. Everybody's taking bids. Everybody's shopping. They're all looking to save money. A lot of them are using the channel as a way to negotiate with their incumbent relationships to drive prices down and have no intention of moving. They just want to get their costs lower. So they bring an agent in and, you know, they table three or four bids, and then they go back to their incumbent and cut the price. Many of the agents we're seeing are really experiencing pain. You know, they were either positioned in the lower end of the market, and that market's being gobbled up by promotional offers that don't necessarily include, you know, channel delivery, and so they're getting pinched on the small to medium business side. You've got folks like, you know, I won't name any specific carriers, but very large multi-billion dollar companies that are really putting segmentation into their commission models and saying these accounts are hands-off. We've got, you know, branch named account lists to service those. You know, you're not allowed in. And then on the lower end, they're telemarketing and saying we don't want you in those either. We want you to service this very specific market set. So people are losing the opportunity to even call on customers while at the same time accounts are being, you know, cannibalized and poached. So it's very difficult when you look at, from an agent perspective, both the economic decline that's going on and the parallel that the carriers are also getting a bit desperate, and they're starting to do things like reduce commissions and, like I said, channel segmentation and whatnot. But what really knocked me over the edge on the economic downturn, I'm a member of a group called Vistage. It's essentially a CEO group for 16,000 CEOs all around the world, and we often have some, you know, very well-placed speakers come out and talk with us. And a recent visit from Archer Group, which is a company that consults for the White House and, you know, the OMB and some other guys, you know, they came out and did some analysis of, you know, what's going on in the worldwide economy, what's going on inside, you know, Obama's plan and the debt structure that's going with that. And it is undeniable. And I think the market as recently as this week, which would be the week of June 23rd, produced results that said, you know what, things look a little better, but they're still not good. You're seeing CEOs and major insider, you know, trading going on where, you know, it's a 22-to-1 22 being people selling to one buying in the last 6 months of major shareholders in these companies that are actually, you know, officers of these companies. So, you know, the people running the companies aren't buying into this economic recovery. The reports that came from Archer and some of the think tanks that we talked to, they all show massive negative decline still yet to come. Being in South Florida, I'm one of the markets that shows that there is a general, I would say, across-the-board decline in real estate, and we haven't even seen the commercial real estate bomb go off yet, which is the really big one that everybody's getting very, very nervous about. So all of those things combined don't paint a rosy picture in the way I'm reading in USA Today yesterday. You know, if you read the Financial Times, you read Investor Business Daily, you know, where the real information is, you're starting to see that, you know, this is what I'm going to call a dead cat bounce. You're going to see by fourth quarter a small increase, and then we're going to see another fall off probably when, you know, inflation, possibly hyperinflation, and commercial real estate debt begins to climb at frightening rates.
And so I'm sorry.
You said you're in Connecticut?
Right.
The Connecticut marketplace, you know, I know a number of people in Greenwich. I mean, Midtown's a joke right now. I mean, it's pretty bad.
You're talking about the real estate market, right?
Commercial real estate in particular. Residential's pretty much, I think, wound out. It's probably got another 10% left on a bad day. But commercial real estate, you know, is a ticking time bomb. I mean, you look at the damage that it's going to do to the economy. And, you know, I don't want to pontificate here too much. It's just my, you know, my opinion. It's certainly not as educated as some others, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you've got 10 going to 12% unemployment, businesses reducing payrolls by 15-20% across the board, they can't pay the rent. You know, and if there's nobody replacing the tenants, then the landlords are suffering under, you know, ridiculous interest rates and, you know, rising costs of doing business.
Well, it seems to me, I mean, not to take this too far on a tangent, but this is, I did ask you the question that, first of all, I'd say that well, you're playing out the worst-case scenario, and a lot of the things that you're saying are undeniably accurate. But the flip side to that is that I think that we're going to see an economy where a lot of people are used to taking, who are used to taking home X, are going to have to become comfortable taking home 80% of X. And that 80% of X is going to be the new X, more or less. That's just the reality. And I think that's, we'll see that happen across the board. And so now the question becomes, how does your company and how do the people buying from you excel or at least tread water so that they don't go backwards in let's say, an average scenario of the economy being poor or a worst-case scenario? What are you going to do? And what should your customers and customers' customers do?
Well, I think there's a lot of answers to those questions, but I'll address them specifically at the channel side, at the end user side, and then what I'll call the economic side, you know, just the general comment. At the channel side, I think it's imperative that channel partners recognize that if they can't bill for the value they provide, they don't provide value. There is a very, very big difference between being a professional slideshow presenter who comes out to a guy's office and says, let me save you 20%, and plays that game all day, and a guy who comes out and does true solution selling, who really sits down with the customer shoulder to shoulder and says, as your consultant, I would like to bring like industry experiences that I've had in supporting other customers to bear on your situation and demonstrate to you, not only can I save you money, but I can give you a plan on how to architect technology into your, you know, telecommunication strategy. Could be something as simple as, let me get some error cards and plug them into some, you know, routers where I can give you landline, you know, wireline capability on your T1 and a failover onto a Wi-Fi card. So most customers don't do that today.
That's so selling account. Solutions first is to sell solutions as opposed to just selling lines.
Correct. And to partner with companies who are adept at servicing multiple applications, multiple solutions in an efficient manner. And I say that because obviously that slants to my business. Our entire company is built around really two simple premises. One is we want total wallet share. I want to be able to sell our customers a 100% with a bow on it solution for all their telecommunications needs where it makes sense, so that the customer has a single point of entry for not only billing, but for their production on how they procure it, how they quote it, how they ultimately analyze it in a telecom expense management portal, how they generally do telecommunications. That's the solution that we provide. And the second is to recruit and service only those that fit in a certain, you know, product category or, you know, billing category, which I would characterize to be $1 million a year and up. We made a decision about 6 months ago that we are no longer going to support the SMB market, because the money involved there in supporting channel and supporting the needs of a $5,000 user are far outweighed by that of a customer who has much stickier revenue across maybe 10 products, you know, half a dozen different carriers, and sees value in having a single bill and a single supplier and a single procurement platform and the tools that we give them for software. If the channel partner follows that credo, he's knocking on bigger doors with certainly much more complex problems, and these folks need help more than any other company profile that I see in the market today, no matter what the vertical. They all are understaffed, overwhelmed with things that they have to do. They're not getting the support they used to from their carriers. I mean, certainly the SMB market, that happened years ago, but now even the largest customers are being underserved because the carriers are losing all the talent or downsizing it, worse yet. And the customers are, you know, getting constantly rotating account teams with, you know, less and less well-trained people supporting them, even on the technology side. So you're left with, they got to turn to somebody who can help them navigate all this stuff. And that person needs to be well-trained, and they need to be positioned in a way to be able to give, you know, CXO-level presentations to large buyers. Those channel partners, which tend to be the profile of the channel partners we have here, are very, very successful. The ones that we're seeing are really struggling are the up-and-down-the-street transactional guys.
Right.
You know, they're selling for CBON. They're selling for Paytech, you know, $1,000 T1 here and $800 T1 there. And while those models are great, long-term, they will not succeed. They can't because there's not enough money in the deals.
So I think it's interesting that what you're explaining is basically what I've seen in the communications and tech space over the last 6 months is the companies that have pretty good professional services teams have done well because companies have laid off so much of their staff that they've really cut into the meat, and they subsequently need the work to be done by someone. So what they do is they tend to outsource more of those needs to these companies with professional services teams. And so what you're advocating is that the channel partners go out there and really brush up on their skills to be able to take over more and more of what a company used to deal with internally, and then focus on the larger companies that have the pain points of not only complexity of billing and the challenges of procurement and all the other issues that a large company has, but also they most likely have laid off more people than they maybe should have for the amount of work that they're still doing, correct?
Yeah, and I think you said something that was, you know, very on the mark. Earlier you were commenting that, you know, there is during an economic downturn, you know, you could have, you know, a mid-cycle, you could have, you know, we could be coming towards the end of it, it could be average, it could be, you know, grim and morose like I was describing. But in that somewhere, there's going to be, like you said, what I'll call a downsizing of the American standard. You know, the guy that used to make 100 is now making 80, whatever the number is. And I think in order for that guy to make 100 again, he has to upgrade himself. He has to take the time to train, re-educate, and become more valuable in the workforce so that, you know, that job that he goes and pursues commands the appropriate pay. Well, in the channel community, I don't think it's any different. I think what's different in the mentality is the channel partners have been very, very well paid. And I would even venture to say, even though this is a channel-focused, you know, presentation, overpaid for the represented gift of opening a door and allowing a carrier access to a customer. Very, very few of the channel partners that we're dealing with actually do what I would call design work, professional services, and, you know, what I'll call the heavy lifting in, you know, network you know, sales. They're really out there opening doors for other people to do that work for them. And that's how the agent community has evolved all these years, because I remember back in the 5-6 years ago, people saying, hey, we're going to be selling VoIP, we're going to be selling this, and all of the data integrators are going to be the guys that take over, and the voice guys are just going to die. Well, that didn't happen, because the voice guys have something that's incredibly valuable, customer relationships. The problem is that those valuable customer relationships are no longer exclusively going through those channel partners anymore. They're going to Cisco VARs. They're going to integrators that traditionally wouldn't touch that business, but now because data and voice really is just, you know, an integrated application environment on a pipe, it's not necessary anymore to be some highly trained voice rep. You're now talking about a guy who needs to be probably a bit more trained on the equipment side, and certainly far more educated on application level, you know, not only sales prowess, but, you know, technical skills, you know, to be able to recognize that's a VMware app, this is what I should be doing, or, you know, this is a thin client environment, or this is a, you know, an application that, you know, is a remote access, you know, server type app. A lot of reps aren't trained to do that. So the customers look at them and say, no value. And I think that's going to be part of that downsizing you were alluding to earlier. The guy that was making, say, $250 in commissions last year is going to struggle to make $150. Because it's getting harder and harder to just, what I would say, schmooze your way into a sale. The sales are far more technically challenging, and the customers really require, I think, more skill for them to feel good about buying, you know, a larger network. At the lower end of the market, you can probably still make a lot of what I would call transactional sales, $1,000 at a time, and make a good living. But it will be short-lived.
Wow. So, that, I mean, you're really, the writing's on the wall then. I mean, you really spelled out what needs to be done. So training, upgrading your skill set, and focusing on being more of a solution provider. Those are some of the takeaways that I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the channel. I mean, I may paint a gloomy picture of the economy, but I think this is an opportunity that hasn't availed itself in quite some time. There was a bubble when voice, you know, it was a nickel a minute and people were getting 20-25%. You know, now voice is, you know, probably sub 2 cents and in many cases sub a penny, and so highly commoditized you can start buying teas over the internet. So one of the things that's coming, and this is what we're building for, our PartnerNet tool, which has been 3 years in the making. We had a launch about a year ago that really didn't come off as planned because the user interface wasn't as dynamic as we wanted, so we pulled it back. We're now redeploying it this summer in front of the channel show, and right about the time I think you're having your show in Miami. There is a need for the buyer to get out of what I would call, hey, can you get me a quote mode, where he can go get his own quote. And there's some tools out there that are doing that in retail, but nothing really in wholesale yet. And having the channel partner basically get the price piece out of the way, the price is all known up front or, you know, fairly well identified, so the budget's kind of put together. Now the channel partner is spending all of his time working with the people to help, you know, solve problems, which has a, you know, double benefit. One is, I'm not spending resources here at WCS and pricing it into my services to quote all this stuff every day. I let my APIs and my on-net links to all the carriers do that for me through a portal. And B, everybody sees everything real time. So when the customer does place an order, you know, there's a order moving through the system. It's got FOC dates. It's got delivery time frames. It's, you know, the equipment package, the design is all sitting there for everybody to view, the customer, my internal, you know, delivery people, and the channel partner, and even integrators and people that might be involved along the way. It's a total exposure of the price points and what's being ordered and presented out to that client. And it gets that channel partner out of operational stuff and into sale, you know, pure sales.
Right, which is what they should be doing, right?
It's what they enjoy doing. I mean, I hate operations. You know, I'm a CEO of a telecommunications company, and I'd say 50% of my time is spent in ops. But what I really enjoy is the roots of where I came from, which is going out and helping customers with problems and being rewarded not only financially, but it's kind of nice to get that letter when they say, you did a great job and you helped us. You made an impact on my organization. I don't want to sit here and work trouble tickets.
Right, right. No, sure.
You know, so it's a lot of fun but it requires a philosophical wholesale, you know, no pun intended, conversion from the way the channel's been trained and developed all these years. It really becomes more of a, who do I want to be when I grow up in this new industry? Because this industry is changing, as you know, very quickly. I mean, I read all of your, you know, trade publications, and if you think it's hard for us to keep up with it, can you imagine what a CIO is going through with a downsized workforce and all the things he's being asked to do? Of course he's turning to professional service guys. He has no choice anymore. So if you can find a trained organization to do that, that's a great opportunity to make a lot of money. That's what we're aspiring to do by building our sales channel to be really comprised of those very kind of people. Yeah.
So your company's been doing well even through this downturn. Do you attribute it to your ability to understand what's going on with the market? And I mean, what is that where the growth is coming from? Because your comprehension, or is it the move to the larger companies, or a combination of the above?
Well, our company was always the philosophical customer that we were always chasing was a guy who bought 5 services plus and originally spent more than $500,000 a year on telecom. With the advent of mobile, you know, really doubling people's spends very quickly, and, you know, the 30% year-over-year growth rate in that area, we've been really looking at the company and saying, where are our customers going to come from in the future? And as we started working farther and farther up market, when the collapse came, we were fortunate that, yes, some of our customers downsized, you know, instead of having 500 locations, you know, they might have trimmed off 20, 25 of them, and, you know, we lost some revenue. But at the same time, those logos, those very large recognized brands, allowed us to go talk to other logos that size who said, you know, no, you don't have to be sold that WCS can execute. Here's a list of people that they've executed for. Let's let you look at our environment and see if there's anything you can do to help us save money. Because it's always, you know, initially about saving money. And we have been able to rapidly grow the business in the last year, even beyond my projections in some areas of the business, primarily, you know, acquisition of new logos. But we still haven't, you know, mastered the mobile side yet. That's still what I would call an emerging product for us, but we are making inroads there. My prediction is in less than 24 months, over half of our revenue will come from mobile as an actual biller and wholesale provider of MVNO services, because that's where all the money is now.
So is that what your plans are then going forward, is to focus more on mobile?
Absolutely. Yeah, my, you know, every available dollar that I have outside of our marketing that, you know, touches channel and, you know, some of the direct services that we do, we are spending in mobile. The first thing that we're deploying, it's really been an extension of something we've already been building, is our NOC and getting more into the managed services, you know, side of the business, you know, monitoring ports, helping people look at the application layer of their internet transactions and, you know, defending them from, you know, outside threats, you know, denial of service attacks and, you know, firewall issues and things like that, which is pretty commonplace. But when you bundle it with all the other things that we do from a billing perspective, telecom expense management, which is a huge growth market right now, and technology migration, which is the guts of that professional services we were talking about, it's all in there. And that's why the customers are coming. If I can add the mobile full-fledged, then that's a piece of wallet share that we've never touched. It's right now, by our count, over 38% of the revenue of our entire customer base, and we don't even call on it.
Wow.
And it's growing about 30% a year. I just visited 3 customers, all of them over $1 billion in sales last week, and every single one of them had more mobile spend than they had landline. It was amazing. And, you know, we kind of looked at that and said, gee whiz, you know, we really need to accelerate our plan. So we're looking for wireless guys, not the guys that are selling handsets. We're looking for guys that do telemetry apps, machine-to-machine, who understand, you know, backup environments and doing non-terrestrial work to complement, you know, primary infrastructure networks, you know, like P1s and DS3s for MPLS, to give customers, you know, disaster recovery solutions. And that's a big market right now, just getting ready to be born.
Yeah, there's tremendous opportunity there. Agreed. It's very exciting. So we talked a little bit before this conversation, the recorded conversation anyway, about channel partners and some of them determining an exit strategy, and you had some thoughts, and I thought it was worth bringing it up again so you could comment on on that topic?
Well, there's, you know, for years there's been a number of efforts at how do you incent a channel partner to bring, you know, rapid amounts of business to you and give him some kind of equity in the reward of his sales. I have some competitors out there that are offering, you know, equity buyout programs, but they stipulated on terms and conditions that may not be fully realizable at any point. You know, particularly with the economic downturn, I think they're very unrealistic. But in our world, it's a natural evolution for a channel partner. So let me paint a picture. You've got $100,000 a month of business booked over at, you know, carrier XYZ and PDQ. And you come to WCS. WCS says, look, I'll give you a buy rate on similar or identical network profile services. Convert those customers away from the carriers to our services. We will give you, you know, a buy rate of X. Your margins will improve to typically twice what you're making today. Most of our channel partners are experiencing in excess of 30% gross margins on their business because they control the price point. So if you figure an average channel partner's out there at 15 points, you know, in some cases a bit more than that, they're doing quite well with us. And when the customer asks for a write-down or, you know, they want special terms and conditions, they're not calling into a finance desk. They're calling, you know, their partner in their own business and saying, what do you want to do with this guy? And they rewrite the deal. And I don't even get the phone call. I just get a call saying, can you change the rate? So, you know, when a customer's got control like that, or channel partner, I should say, over time, I see who his customers are, what he charges those customers at a retail price point, what kind of trouble management experience I have managing those customers because we take all the tickets. I know what kind of services they buy and the frequency they buy them. And I just have a general overall, what kind of client are they? Are they a big load on our organization and customer service? Are they pretty quiet? Are they friendly? You know, in growth mode, whatever. So as a buyer of that potential customer base, it is a natural evolution for that channel partner to say one day, you know what, Chris, I'm done. Can you cash me out? I'd like to sell you the customer base. I know everything there is to know about the client, including their pay history, which is pretty important when you're doing an acquisition. Most of the other guys out there, that's not how they're built. They're really built on some multiple of sales, or they're built on a multiple of EBITDA, which, you know, moves all over the place. In my world, it's a little easier because I give them a buy rate, and I know exactly how much margin they're making because that's the commission check. So it's a pretty easy formula for me to be able to say, okay, Mr. Channel Partner, you're doing $100,000. I'll give you, you know, X months receivables as a check, and you cash out. And it's sensible. It makes perfect sense if the channel partner's on a buy-sell program and he's been partnering with me all that time. I'm a willing ally in that effort, as opposed to, yeah, I'm going to try and sell my customer base to, say, Quest. You know, that day's not going to happen easily, and if it does, it'll be at a very low multiple. And I'm not picking on Quest. I'm just saying, you know, a big carrier buying an aging customer base, I don't think you're going to see the kind of returns that you're going to see here. And I would challenge even my reseller brethren out there to put a formula out there that makes sense, not one that's just published, but actually makes sense to a business-minded person, because the formulas I've seen so far, frankly, they don't make a lot of sense, financially or otherwise. I think it's a promise of a check that will never be cashed. So we're trying to convince channel partners that those who wish to go down this road, you have an opportunity to have more than just a check. You can have the check and you can have an exit.
So cake and eat it too, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's important right now. I mean, gee whiz, if you work for 10 years, wouldn't you want, you know, to eat that cake when you're done? And, you know, we've demonstrated that in a couple of instances. You know, we've acquired two of our channel partners at very nice multiples, and everybody was happy. And the customers too. Because they're staying on the same billing platform and nothing's really changing.
So you've discussed a bit, Chris, on things that channel partners should do, agents should be aware of, ways to upgrade their skills, having to work harder. There's a whole bunch of things we talked about here, and so that kind of gets us up to date. I'm curious, if you can peer out into your crystal ball, which is obviously a challenge, just considering how turbulent markets are today.
24 months is, you know, a gift if you can do that.
Yeah, but I typically ask about 5 years, and if you're still standing or still sitting and not passed out after me asking you that question, where do you think we will be, assuming, I mean, I would imagine that in the next 5 years we're going to get back to normal, whatever normal means.
I wish I could say I would agree with that. I'm frequently called a doomsayer when it comes to channel. We are a very big proponent of channel, and always have been and always will be. But there is a simple, undeniable fact coming in our space. If you look at curves, like you would go to a next tag and look at the price of a toaster over, you know, a period of 2 years from the time it came out on the internet,
uh-huh.
You'll see the price fall substantially. Well, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that voice has fallen at a record rate and continues to do so. It's flattened out a little bit in the last year or two, but it's still, you know, dropping in price significantly. Internet bandwidth from a cost per meg perspective is almost a race to zero. I mean, we have partners that are selling us service at $4 a meg, and I'm not even buying that much of it. It's just the nature of it's easy to drive the price down if you know how to aggregate service. You know, you've got mobile phones, you know, dominating a very significant part of the growth trend of telecommunications. AT&T anticipates out of $40 billion, they'll be at $80 in 24 months. That's how much growth they feel is still out there in that space. And, you know, there's a number of other carriers that are, you know, rotating the same kinds of, you know, multiples on growth. So if you look at mobile, if that's where all the growth is, let's look at how competitive mobile is for a channel partner to go sell it. We all know that it's a pretty regulated business. I mean, it's hard to break into. It's very commoditized. You know, you've got, you know, retail and all these other things competing there. So it's, you know, unless you're going to be in the, you know, storefront business or peddling cards to, you know, groups of people, you need to have some other mousetrap. You need to be in the business of, you know, selling a mobile optimization software tool, you know, to get people a better view on how to save money in mobile, or you have to have additional tools, things that you don't just get from a carrier. You're going to have to build them and make them part of your business model. The average agent doesn't do that. The average agent is not going to go out and invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in hire bodies. They want to remain what I'll call salespeople, and that's fine. The problem with that model is, in my humble opinion, within the next 5 years, because you said five, I think you're going to see a number of highly commoditized portals hitting the U.S. marketplace, one of them coming from Japan very soon. And these portals largely provide the services to the customers at cutthroat prices, and there's not a lot to it. You know, they've got a provisioning desk, and they're saying to the customer, don't go through a middleman. Just come to the web. You say you need DSL? I got it. You say you need a T? I got that too. You need a mobile phone? Got that too. Want it on one bill? Got that too. And I'm just one of those people. There are people certainly far more, you know, deep-pocketed than WCS who have already deployed applications like this. My favorite example that I show to channel partners is look at DSL as provisioned by AT&T. It is a humanless transaction. You push the buttons on the internet, and magically a white box with a router appears. You plug it in, and it largely works right out of the box. Many of our telecommunications services, in my opinion, Rich, in the next 24 to 36 months will be provisioned and delivered in a very similar manner. And you don't need a channel partner to deliver that.
And no doubt SIP trunking is making that easier.
Exactly. I mean, there are a number of products out there that, you know, I don't want to say the beginning of the end and the world's getting dark and the tar's rising up to the kneecaps. It's not like that. It's just they have to evolve. These channel partners must get out of denial that this is going to change, whether, you know, we all like it or not. And where do we sit? Well, 5 years from now, I think we're all going to be sitting in a different place selling a lot of mobility apps. I think these things that we laugh about today about cloud computing and people using parallel computing power and, you know, grids of colos and being able to do massive transaction processing and not do it on site anymore, somebody's got to sell that stuff. But it's not going to be a guy who worked for 2 years at, you know, Lytel and jumped out on the street and went to a CFO and said, hey, man, I want you to go buy $500,000 of stuff from me. Hello?
Yeah, sorry about that.
So it's kind of hard, to your point, to predict. But I think that I think it's very likely that the face and architecture of what a channel partner looks like is going to be so radically different in 5 years that you won't even recognize it. Very, very Cisco-like, very, very much in that, you know, hey, voice converts to data vein.
Well,
but
that's
exciting. It's an opportunity.
It is a tremendous opportunity for those people who acknowledge it. And I'm really excited that we've had the opportunity to talk about it, and I'm looking forward to further discussions on the topic because if you don't know about it, I guess if you don't see what's coming, then you can get blindsided. So I'm hoping that we can get this podcast distributed out as widely as possible so that agents and channel partners, resellers can just get a glimpse of what they need to do to be relevant in the next 5 years.
Well, what I love about TMC is your reach and dynamic of, you know, different channel partners and solution providers. It's so diverse, and in your case, global, that you know, we're not alone. There's a lot of this going on in other countries that we're not even privy to, and it's exciting to watch that too, because eventually it's all going to be one big homogenized planet of telecommunications. You know, I remember the old days of international callback and all that. Why does connecting networks have to be any different? You know, it's going to be exciting to see the U.S. and Europe and Asia all kind of glue together in one big web. And that'll be in our lifetime, certainly.
Well, certainly IP and SIP have helped with that. Now, the next issue is going to be wireless and 4G technologies, and we'll see how IP over 4G continues that transformation to I guess, single systems, right?
Yeah, and you know, the advent of, you know, I just got 25 meg to my house. I mean, I'm one of the late adopters, I guess, but, I mean, what a difference. It's a whole different world when you got a lot of bandwidth. You can do all kinds of things you couldn't do, you know, on a DSL line. So,
I'm at 30 right now, and for an additional, I think it's maybe $40 or $50 a month, I can go to 100 with Cablevision.
Yeah, Cablevision's one of the early ones. Did you know in Japan, they give you 100 meg with your colo? It's just part of what they do. It's like they give you a meg here in America, you get 100 over there. You got phones that will do 10 meg, and you're just sitting there going, you know, geez, we don't have a clue yet.
There's now something from Japan that I like more than sushi.
Yeah.
All right, and that's pretty tough. Yeah, that's a pretty tough accomplishment for that to be possible. Wow, that's great. It was a pleasure to speak with you and to meet you on this podcast, Chris, and I really appreciate your time, and thanks for everything, and hopefully our viewers got a lot out of this, and they probably would want to find out more about your company, and hopefully you'll give us a web address or a way to contact you.
Yeah, we're at www.wcs, like wholesalecarrierservices.com, and sales@wcs.com. If you have an email inquiry, we'll be happy to respond to that. Our toll-free number is 888-940-5600. And we'd love to talk with anybody who's interested in learning more.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Chris Barton, CEO and President of Wholesale Carrier Services. My name is Rich Trani with TMC. Thanks for listening to this TMCNet podcast, and have a great day.
Thanks, Rich. Bye-bye.